This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, and welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast, the most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight, this is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy, it's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us, we don't do interviews, we do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill, we drink, we play games, we have the song of the week, we have the creative curse word of the week, as long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm gonna go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on the choice of a mandate. Get it on. And welcome to CarCast. Matt Kroll. It's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there. So much going on. I know you just got back from auction week.
Yeah.
I checked. You could call it show prep, I guess. I was perusing the auction sites and seeing some of the prices that were fetched. A couple things jumped out at me. First off, that goddamn Miura SV, 3.5 and change. Listen,
yeah,
we sold ours for 2.2 several years ago. Did it to buy a house. I get it. That's how the world works. But I always said that's going to be a $5 million car one day. Like I've always said that car. Why are these other? You know, when a Lamborghini SV, and I'll screw it up a little here, Matt, but you'll get the gist. When a Ferrari Lusso, like a 64, 65 Ferrari Lusso was, you know, 1.8 or 2 million bucks, that Lamborghini SV was 950.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And I was just like, and they were the same prices, like a couple of like Ferraris that weren't that GTC or something, GT, whatever, the one. I always said, why? Why is that Lamborghini SV the same price or cheaper than X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, like and, the 330 GTC?
Right, yeah. Right. And a convertible, you know, the convertible GTC Ferrari was more than an SV, you know, or whatever. There are a bunch of cars out there. Even, yeah. And so I was like, no, that's that, you know. So I bought one, but then I had this house thing happen. I had to basically sell it. I probably wouldn't have. But, 3.58, you know, 80 grand. I mean, 3.6, essentially, you know. I was like, this is a – and of course, now the 330 GTC is, you know, convertibles 1.6 or something, and this is 3.6, you know. It went.
Yeah.
It's up. It's all going to go up.
I mean, Lamborghinis have like, they started low, which is interesting. Then they've crept up and then they sort of plateaued and nobody moved them.
Right. Right?
They didn't fire sale them like the Toyota GT, right? The 2000 GT for a little bit, right? Million dollar car became a $500,000 car.
Right.
And then a couple, like they kind of sat and nobody moved them, and maybe some private sales, and then they crept up a little, and then nobody moved them, and then they crept up, and now this one was a gorgeous example.
Oh yeah,
I didn't get a chance to see it.
I've seen it at Bob Off. It's beautiful,
yeah,
beautiful
it's
color,
beautiful.
Blue Note Day. Also the S's and the P's are, you know, 1.8, 1.6 or whatever. I mean, it's all the Miuras. I think the game's on with the Miuras. I always knew it. I just didn't know when it was gonna happen, but it's on now.
Some of the other big cars that were there, you know, Ferrari F40s. The F40 at RM went for $2.15 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then one went at Barrett Jackson for $2.75 million. Mm-hmm. And it was the gray one that RM was trying to private sale that we saw at Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they didn't get the price they wanted, so somebody decided, hey,
$2.75 million.
Yeah, yeah. But like, we'll go to Barrett Jackson with no reserve. And it was the top seller at Barrett Jackson.
Yeah.
Cool car. But a funky car because I think it raced a little. I don't know that it was street legal. It looked cool, and it was a big money car, but interesting.
The thing that I found interesting when I was looking at Barrett Jackson last night is the crazy Chevy Blazers and the C5 Blazer,
yeah,
and so many of the customs just getting all the money in the world. It scares me a little when stuff gets trendy and people get on. Far as I could tell, a few years ago, and not very long ago, 2 or 3 years ago, it was all about the Broncos, the vintage Broncos, and the Blazers were like, who cares?
Right.
And I mean, really sort of who cares? There wasn't even on anyone's radar. And the Broncos were getting built up, and everyone's seen them around town. And there was a few companies, Icon did them, and there's another company or two that did them. We talked to the guy at SEMA in Vegas about it. Yeah, there's guys who are doing the Broncos, and kind of arguably it's a kind of a nicer platform to jump off on than the Blazer. And when I say Blazer, I mean, I don't know, 74, 73 or something like that.
But the Broncos small.
Yeah, smaller. Just, I don't know. It's just kind of the difference between a, you know, 66 Mustang Fastback and a Chevelle or something.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Just like sort of a smaller, tighter, had a little more of a Euro vibe to it. I would say the Bronco feels a little more Euro than the Blazer. And so people were breathing on those and doing some really nice jobs on those. And then they were selling for like $250 to $300 or something for like a nicely done one with a Coyote motor in it and stuff like that.
A lot of credit goes to Icon on that.
Yes. And then the Blazers were neither here nor there. I didn't see a lot of them come across because I don't think people want to dump $150 into something they couldn't get more than $75 for.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the Blazer. And then I blinked my eyes, and there's a bunch of Blazers going for like $450 and like $550 and $350. And the Broncos are still, you know, $225, $250. You know, I don't know what the fuck happened.
So Ring Brothers did one a few years ago. Not a very famous like SEMA build, but they did one, I forgot who, for some sports ball player. And then I think they did like another one for the Omaze charity thing, and then another one, and then another one, and the cool one we saw at SEMA this year with the like the basket weave seats, and I think that started getting the attention of some of the aftermarket parts makers as well, going, oh, maybe we're going to start, you know, now we've got a CAD file for a new chassis, and we're starting to make some suspension pieces and repopping a few of the restoration pieces for it. And it started to catch on, but you're right. The Broncos, the Blazers were all still doing well. You can tell the difference in price. A Bronco comes up with a small block Ford done well, it's 100, 110. If it has a Coyote swap, it's 130 to 150. And if it's off the charts good for some reason, there was a few for 300 plus.
Right.
The Blazers were doing well. And then the one I still don't get is the Eleanor Mustang, the recreation.
Oh my God.
And every year there's six of them out there, and they're all pulling a couple of hundred grand. Which is interesting because it used to be...
Hold on, Ben. Pull up Barrett Jackson from Saturday. Sorry, go ahead.
It used to be if it was officially licensed, you'd pay heavy, like 30 grand for the licensing fee. Those cars are getting 400. And people were paying that for the past few years. But they got dragged into court. They lost. So now there's no more officially licensed. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that does to the guys that bought it, because now anybody can make that car. Mm-hmm. If you paid top dollar for officially licensed, I guess you get to still say it was officially licensed, and now there won't be any more. But now anybody can make those and license it.
I was confused. I saw one for, I don't know, five and change, I think. Yeah. I saw one for
so that one was change. A movie car.
Oh, that was a movie car. So yeah. That's why. Was it five? Was it over? It was over five.
I think with the VIG and everything, it was like five.
A yeah. movie car or the movie
a car? A movie car. It was the movie, but there was a bunch for the
There's
movie.
A
so
hero
I don't know.
Car.
I don't. Yeah, I don't remember. And I don't know if it started off as a stunt car and finished up as kind of a hero car. It looked complete and it looked nice.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like a thrashed stunt car,
right?
And that got money. So maybe I don't know. Maybe there could have been like seven hero cars, and they, you know, that
be interesting. It does seem like a lot of hero cars, but maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Sorry, not hero cars. It seems like a lot of cars, stunt cars, and
a lot
cars.
Of star cars and hero cars for that.
The yeah, and so a lot of the customs, the vets, but not so much even the vets. Like, you know, for okay, couple things. So let me just backtrack. If you and I were married, God willing, one day, and you said, I want to spend $450,000 on an 05 GT, Ford GT.
Yeah.
I'd say, knock yourself out, honey.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would know when we were getting divorced in 4 years that we could probably get $625 for it.
Yeah.
But if you said, I want to pay $450 for a C5 Blazer that's been really breathed on nicely, I'd be like, I don't know what that car is going to be worth in 4 years when we get divorced. Because there's no, I mean, I get it. It's beautiful. And somebody spent $175 to get it that way.
Yeah.
But $450, how do you have it appraised? Like, what is it worth? Like, where are the comps? How's this going
to
go?
I guess you just go to the Barrett Jackson results page and see. But you're right. Now there are some customs
today, but yeah. in 4 years, or I don't know where that
in
car's
20 gonna, years. Like, right. What do you do? Right.
Right.
It's funny. I was talking about this with Brad and Aaron on Shift and Steer, right? Because there was a famous, pretty famous custom called Chicane. It was a Biscayne. Troy Chapanier built it. He built it for his client, Billet Specialties, about 20 years ago. Really over the top, twin turbo, the best of everything. That car went on power tours, magazines. It was famous. It did everything it needed to do from a marketing standpoint. But it waited too long, right? Ring Brothers have built cars for SEMA, brought it to a client. 2 years later, they get $400,000 at Barrett Jackson. This car was 20 years later, and the catalog didn't do it justice. People looked at it, saw some small pictures in the description. It should have had a two-page spread with all of the details on it, because back in the day, this was probably $300,000 or $400,000 to make. And before they brought it to Barrett Jackson, the owner, Bill especially, sent it back to Troy, blew it apart, freshened up the paint, put it back together, probably put $250 into it, sold for $250.
Right.
Yeah. And it was just one of these cars that the audience is there's surprisingly a fair amount of younger people in the audience, you know, mm-hmm. 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Even at RM, by the way, RM said something like 29% new bidders and like 20% or 19% new.
Really?
Yeah, there was the Ben has the chart somewhere, but new people going in. And this car was just too long. It was 20 years was too long, and it didn't get enough of the marketing it needed.
Mm-hmm.
So RM, by the way, 29% new buyers and 15% new bidders.
Mm. I guess which that's
is,
good.
Yeah, so it's growing. But yeah, I don't think the Blazer is going to quite hold it. There's going to be a few that'll be the standout Blazers. And the Icons, I think, will do well because they built a reputation for their company. It's got kind of a singer thing going for it.
Yeah, I'm not including the Icons in this group or even the Ring Brothers. Ben, did you find Saturday's What are we talking about?
A Barrett Jackson.
Barrett Jackson. Yeah. I was amazed at how much those things were selling through for. A lot of custom stuff. I mean, you know, I always say, like, when Chris Titus was getting divorced and he had to sell his Chip Foose mobile, it's like there was nothing there.
Yeah, and that was a weird time, too, because the customs were really just pennies on the dollar.
I don't know what he's doing. Just go to Saturday, can you please?
Oh, he's just looking at Blazer.
I know, don't do that. Just go to Saturday sales on Barrett Jackson.
Let me tell you guys about Snap-on. You know, today's episode is brought to you by the makers and fixers of Snap-on. Makers and fixers keep the world moving. You find them in factories, repair shops, roads and rails, building and maintaining everything. The makers and fixers are the backbone of automotive, aviation, agriculture, mining, marine, and military. I know some of the makers and fixers personally. You do. Sean's a great example. Leno wrote a good article the other day about the makers and fixers. He was just talking about this is the backbone of America, and we should not discount them. Like, we should be rewarding them because they're just building and they're never going to go away. It was such a wonderful article, a piece that he wrote on it. So makers and fixers is not just a job, it's a calling. They want to hear from you as well. So share your story at makersandfixers.com/carcast and check out the makers and fixers on Instagram.
All right. And Ben, you can wait to bring up Aaron next time until Matt's done with this piece there, but okay. Aaron Shelby has joined us.
Hello.
Can you hear
us? Hello. How are y'all doing today?
Good. It's good to see you again. I saw Aaron, I don't know, a week and a half ago in Dallas, right?
That was quite a show you had there. Enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was a real fun show.
With John Popper?
Yeah. I went out, did about 45 minutes of stand-up at the top, and then, actually, John Popper, Blues Traveler, did 5 minutes of stand up at the top, and then
then
I did about 45 minutes, and then he came out and did 4 or 5 songs with his keyboard player, sort of, you know, little bit MTV Unplugged style.
Yeah,
and then Chris and the boys and his band joined them, and it was really, we never done it before, but I thought it was a really satisfying format, didn't you, Aaron?
Did. It was really enjoyable. It was, I've been a while since I've been to just straight stand up, but having the mix of the music and you up there and just telling the stories, it was, very engaging. I enjoyed it.
I'm so glad you made it out. So Shelby, we're, celebrating, Carol's 100th birthday, and, it's gotta be satisfying that there's a real, I don't know if it's a resurgence, but it's like Shelby's more Shelby conversations, probably because of the movie.
Yeah.
And, but other things in the last like 2.5 years than the combined 10 years before that. Does that seem accurate, Aaron?
I think you're spot on. You know, it's, Carol passed away in 2012. The movie definitely helped a lot. That Ford versus Ferrari movie did a bunch for just getting the common knowledge of the Shelby history out there. The passion we're seeing around the cars themselves today, Matt, I saw you at Bear Jackson.
Yep.
The prices the Shelbys were bringing were crazy. And that passion and the desire for people to want to own or be part of the Shelby world is as strong as I've ever seen it.
Yeah, you know what I always find sort of interesting is I knew some guys that had some Shelby stuff, and there was always the thought that, oh man, when he passes away, like an artist and their paintings, this is going to pop, you know? And then he passed away and nothing happened. It was like they were still trading for the same amount. There was no pop. There's no jump. There's no anything. And then, you know, almost a decade went by and now everyone's into it. And I, a lot of that's the movie. Maybe some of it's the doc that we made. And then some of it's just,
it needs a little time.
It just needs to steep a little bit, you know?
Well, I think so. And you look at, say, the Cobras are always unique because there's less than 1,000 of those made. And so they all have their own stories. And you look at the ones that have I'll say, a more positive story or a little more known history, they go for a little bit more. The ones that have a little more of a, say, sketchy story or something happened to them in the past that's a little unknown, you know, that you haven't seen those pop as much. But there's a lot of knowledge out there of these cars because there's so few of them that are out there. You know, obviously we're not in Ferrari GTO category by any means, but it's a really interesting dynamic to see what's happening with the market out there and the vintage stuff and the new stuff. Quite frankly, there were some trucks that sold that were, they went for over list price and they were 3 or 4 year old trucks.
Yeah. The Fords. Yeah. The, I mean, also Ken Miles, you know, nobody had heard the name Ken Miles. And when I say nobody, I mean, you know, deep inside baseball car guys, you know, knew about it. I knew obviously of Ken Miles for, you know, quite a long time, but the idea that his notchback Mustang, which he never raced, just the fact that it had Shelby's name on it.
Yeah.
You know, the real Shelby.
$770,000.
Yeah.
For, yeah. More than what Aaron and I both thought it was going to go for.
Well, no, you're for sure. Exactly right. I had no idea. I was thinking 350 to 450, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I think we were maybe in the 400 to 500 range, and we were being a little generous.
Yeah, it's a, I don't know, 66, whatever, 65, 66 notchback Mustang that was built for Ken Miles to race, which he never raced as he passed away. But I'll tell you, Aaron, the real feather in the cap when it comes to the Shelby name and the kind of juice it's bringing now is that not a Shelby. It's a Japanese car. It's the Toyota 2000.
Yeah.
Because the Toyota 2000 that sold, I don't know, a year and a half ago or whenever that thing sold for 2.3, 2.5, you know, somewhere, something started with a 2. That car, I think a white one just sold, or, you know, for 550 or 600 or something like that. That car didn't have success.
Yeah.
Wasn't a legendary race car. It simply had the Shelby name and livery on it and was prepped by Carroll Shelby, and it brought all the money. And that, there's no other way to justify that price other than the Shelby name.
You're exactly right. I was surprised. You know, those cars, there's not a lot of them out there, so in general they draw pretty good money, but to get up into, you know, mid to high 2 millions when you're talking all in, that was a huge price on that car. You know, I just think they're beautiful cars. I was going to make a run at it, but that was about double what I was willing to look at.
It's so funny, cuz I was going to say that. I was like, I think you were looking at that car, and then don't be fooled. Aaron is the first to walk away from a price that's too high. We've seen it a few times up at Barrett as well.
Yeah, he doesn't drink enough at those auctions.
He probably
doesn't.
That's
my problem. too many free drinks left.
Yeah.
What's going on in Vegas or Nevada with Shelby?
American. Shelby American.
Shelby American. It's come up in conversation a time or two, and I've been like, yeah, what's the process over there? And
so Shelby American is based in Las Vegas. Our facilities just south of the strip a little bit, in between the airport and the highway down there, just south of the Valley High Golf Course. So we've got that's our Mustang conversion facility. So we have a full shop back there, and then we also have a retail store and we call it a heritage center, not a museum, because it's not zoned for museum, but heritage center. Mm-hmm. And so we tell the Shelby story there. We do tours a couple of times a day there, you know, telling the whole Shelby story. The cars we have in and are on display are changing frequently. A lot of them are on loan from people that have shipped something back, or they need us to store something, and so we keep them out for the public to see. My brother and I have got the movie Cobras. We've had those out there on display before. So it's become a destination. We moved into this particular facility in 2015, and with as close as we are to the strip, it just draws a ton of traffic down there. We've got big windows. You can go out and part of the tours to go into the shop and see what we're doing on the cars. So this year when we did the 400 Hertz Shelby Mustangs, we converted all those in our facility right there.
So explain a little bit of the structure, because I don't think people really fully understand. You're at every Shelby event and unveiling, but pretty much on your own dime. So the Shelby Foundation, which you can explain, is the nonprofit foundation. And all of these other Shelby companies, they're all not necessarily owned by Shelby or the Shelby Foundation. They are separate companies that have licensing agreements and partnerships with the foundation, and whatever licensing fee that gets paid goes to the foundation, which is a nonprofit, right?
It's almost a little more complicated, but it's so Carroll's had a trust up, the Carroll Shelby Trust, and then that kind of is the umbrella. Just below that, you have Carroll Shelby International, which is the parent company of the operating entity. So licensing falls under that. We've got Goodyear Tire Distributorship, Shelby American. All these kind of sub-entities fall under Carroll Shelby International, with the foundation kind of sitting on the side and taking benefit of some of that. So I'm on the board of Carroll Shelby International and act as brand ambassador, as you see me at events, like you said. And then I'm also president on the board of the foundation. So sort of two arms. Ultimately, at the point in time in the future, the whole thing rolls in under the foundation. I won't get into all the specifics on that, but it'll happen at some point in the future where then everything truly operates for the benefit of the foundation. We're not quite there today. We're just we are still a for-profit entity as far as the operating companies go.
Is Shelby Nevada just doing the Mustangs, or do they do any F-150s or trucks?
We do trucks there as well. Our problem is our capacity, and so we actually have a partner in Tuscany, if you're familiar with them. And so they've got a facility in Indiana that already has basically a truck conversion facility set up. So a lot of our truck conversions are in Indiana at Tuscany, where we're doing mainly the Raptors or the smaller niche trucks in Las Vegas, just because of capacity issues. We can't run that many through. We're, you know, several thousand trucks a year. We're, you know, somewhere less than 1,000 Mustangs a year. So when we've got 30, 35 bays, we can only do so much in those in an annual basis.
It's still an incredibly high volume. I mean, doing a few thousand vehicles of conversions between the cars and trucks, that's a lot of vehicles coming out of Shelby American.
It is, and we're excited. And that's on top of what Ford does with, say, the GT500 is the most recent model. So they're building those up in Flat Rock, Michigan, and pay a royalty back to Shelby for that. What we do out of Las Vegas, and what you see a lot in the last 5 years, is more niche type products. Matt, I think you saw the Shelby Centennial we had on display out at Barrett Jackson.
Yeah.
So that was limited to 100 units. And what we found is doing something in units, you know, 50 units, 100 units, 150 units, it just keeps that demand high because everybody wants to have one and not everybody can have one. So it creates an instant wait list. Similar to what we did with the GT500 KR about a year plus ago when we announced that.
Yeah. The Centennial car, I think, got accidentally posted onto Instagram the day before the launch event here in Gardena. And by the end of the day, 93 of the 100 of them were sold.
Yeah. I think there's
a demand for it.
Well, Porsche's kind of figured that out. You know, the new world order is don't flood the market with merchandise, make it exclusive and create that. I guess.
And it works.
Aston Martin, Porsche, in a weird way. Remember a few years ago, and I don't know if it's still really going on, but some savvy realtor said, why don't we take this $1 million house and price it at $750? And then the owner went, why? And then they went, because we'll get a bunch of people in here and we'll start a bidding war and we'll get them all going on it. And it, in a weird way, it's kind of that. It's like it's a little counterintuitive. You go, yeah, why don't we just make the most units possible? We'll make the most money. But it's like, no, make a smaller batch, make it more exclusive, and get people really excited about it. Is it hard to find qualified people, mechanics, and all the labor you need to do these conversions
these days? The makers and fixers.
most definitely. So particularly Las Vegas, I think, you know, Carroll moved to Las Vegas with the factory with his operation in 1995. It's always been a struggle for us out there. That is not a deep pool of automotive talent. And it's been a struggle for the years to keep that consistent. I think through the pandemic, and really just before then, 2019, we really were starting to get a good team together out there. Most of them have stayed with us. But we still run through more people than you would think that are on the shop floor. Everybody likes the idea of working for Shelby, but then you're out there, you know, 10, 12 hours a day putting this stuff together. It can wear some folks out. The other thing that we have an issue with, again, I view it more as a Vegas market problem, there's just not a lot of depth there for suppliers. If you're in Southern California, you've got a ton of painters. You've got a ton of, you know, fabricators on different things. And while California, you can argue, isn't great for business, there's just a long history of that being there. And Las Vegas doesn't necessarily have that right now.
Yeah, right.
So we've got a new program, and I'll tangent a little bit. So one of the cores of the foundation.
I don't know that you guys would move, because that facility could always be used for something. And it's nice having it right next to a Speed Vegas. And I know they share a little and the tracks over there, so they get a little bit of track time. But maybe it grows to like a Tennessee or a South Carolina or something a little bit more where so much of the aftermarket companies have gone to, you know, the Hollies and the Comps of the world.
That's something to take a look at in the future. We continue also to have discussions with Ford about, you know, what are some opportunities for us up in the Michigan market, particularly Dearborn, Detroit area, because, again, you've got a huge talent pool there.
Yeah.
And for us, it's not always efficient to ship something from Flat Rock, Michigan to Las Vegas to be modified, then to go back out to dealers. So we continue to look at opportunities for that. There's no immediate change going. We found, I think, this particular facility fits us well, and we like the traffic that it draws, and we're able to do what we need to out of that with some help elsewhere around the country.
How many square feet is that facility?
About 125,000, I think, off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's good size.
Yeah, I did a factory tour there a while back with Ford when we were when we did the GT500 launch event in Vegas. And it was super impressive. I've been to the Heritage Center, like you mentioned, but a number of events there. We've all, you know, you've been there together.
Yep.
But touring the whole thing and how it's how big it is and how efficient it is impressive. But it's full. It's always full. It's completely jam-packed.
The one thing we've had to do, we actually just down the street, there's a couple of industrial buildings behind it. We've leased out another space for storage. Because we get, you know, 50, 60, 100 cars at a time that we don't have the ability to work on just yet. We've got to put them somewhere. We can't leave them in the parking lot. So we actually have another building down the street.
That's actually a really good point, because I never see all the cars in the lot. I never really thought about that. Like, everything's getting worked on, and I just assumed they were just, like, in and out. And that's it, just, like, a constant flow. But you got to have a staging area at some point.
That's exactly right. And particularly in the last couple of years, what Ford's done with, you know, production kind of off and on the Mustang, we had to take things when they were ready, not necessarily when we wanted them. So it's been a challenge.
So 100 years of Carroll Shelby, and the Centennial car came out, and that sort of kicked off the first of many celebrations. What's the plan this year to celebrate Shelby?
So it's interesting. We've got a number of events coming up. A lot of them are annual events, but they'll have an emphasis on the Centennial this year. A couple of them are a little more specific. So we look at, you know, Dallas, where Carroll grew up. We've got an annual Shelby show that we do here, very Centennial geared this year in early June. The SAC and Team Shelby East Coast Nationals in mid-July are going to have a heavy emphasis on the Centennial at the during the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix week. The other interesting thing this year is the 100th anniversary of Le Mans. And I apologize, you guys may have talked about that already at some point, but you know, to have them coincide, we're actually going to have a Shelby enthusiast event over at the Le Mans Classic in early July, and that's going to be pretty impressive. I've been to Le Mans, fortunately, a couple of times now for the regular race, and there's really a passion for Shelby there. They understand the history of him being a driver and team owner and manufacturer, and so it's going to be fun to go over there. We've got, Jim Parley's going to have his GT40 that he's racing that weekend, and we'll have a couple other Cobras on the grid, and so we're planning some events around that. So it's going to be a fun year.
Goodwood, I think, is doing something as well, right?
That's probably our biggest one, in my opinion. You know, we got contacted by the Goodwood folks back before the end of the year, and the Duke of Richmond that runs and owns Goodwood knew Carroll really well. Carroll spent a lot of time there in the early 2000s. And he also was a driver and had the Cobras run in there. And so they presented to us the idea of celebrating the Carroll Shelby Centennial at the Goodwood Revival in September, which that's going to be fantastic.
Man, what a world you live in, Aaron.
This is going to be a bigger travel year for you than usual. I mean, you're always traveling.
It's going to be a lot of miles this year.
It's going to be a lot of miles this year, but it's going to be fantastic. I mean, Le Mans Classic in Goodwood.
Yeah,
we've never done Le Mans Classic, but Goodwood we've done, and that's fun. And actually, when we were there years ago, we went out to film for some of the docs, and they had as many as possible of the Daytona coupes there.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
That was 2015.
Yeah.
That was there. That was the last time I was there. And all six of them were there. First time since 1964, probably, they'd all been in one place.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great to see.
It is really, if you're really into, in my definition of a car guy, my definition of the car guys, not so much, we're at Bob's Big Boy on Saturday and I got airbags on my pickup truck and I dropped it down to the ground. Like, I don't know. Look, God bless you. I'll take any car guy. But if you're really my definition of a car guy, it is the historics at, or the vintage at Goodwood.
Like, yeah, just the revival.
The revival. Just walking. You can get right up on those cars. They don't, you know, they have a paddock, but they don't shoo you away like you might think they would. You can walk right up on a LM250 Ferrari that won Le Mans, you know, in 1965 or whatever, and Daytonas, and literally walk in between them and stand around. Like, go look at a Ferrari GTO. Just go walk right up to it and then watch them, you know, stage up and get onto that track. I mean, if you're of a certain age and you're a car guy, you really got to put it on your list.
And it's a fun event. You get dressed up to go. You get period correct dressed up to go there. And, you know, the cars in the paddock are basically like in horse stables. They look like kind of like, it's really well done. It's super fun.
It is. I don't even know how to describe it to somebody that doesn't really understand it. It's just, it's until you go there, it's hard to get a gauge of the scope of how large it is and what's there. You mentioned the Ferraris, you know, you've got the Aston Martins and Porsches, all these huge cars you read about all your life, and they're physically, not theoretically, to touch them, but you can get right up on them. And then, you know, the European vintage racing is probably a little more aggressive than the American vintage racing that we see. I mean, those guys are out there beating fenders and pushing each other off the track.
And then there's like an air show going on in the back.
Yeah, there's like a Lancaster bomber overhead and a Spitfire. And then you got some guy in a Holman Moody Galaxy Ford 500 sawn away, and a guy in a Mini Cooper up his ass, flashing his lights. And it's crazy.
And the skinny tire cars with the big wheel, you see like the Jaguar E-types, and they're just sliding off the corner, and the guy's doing this, and the tires are, you know, 4 inches wide.
Well,
and
then it starts raining.
And then it starts raining.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's fantastic and it's fun, except for the mud and the rain. But everything else is good.
Yeah, well it's all good. Yeah, hopefully we'll see you guys over there. It'd be a lot of fun. We're working on a good number of cars that Carroll raced in the 50s to be there. Shelby family-wise, we're going to send over the 49 MGTC that he won his first race in. That'll be on display. But a number of the Ferraris, the Cat Allard, Aston Martins that he raced through his career in the 50s are supposed to be there on display. So we're excited about that.
Are you going to get on the track, do any parade laps, do a little driving?
Possibly. We're talking about that right now. They do like, as you know, they like to get those, even though they're technically on display, they like to get those cars on the track for parade laps. So
you want to be able to hear them.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to do it. Aaron, it was great catching up with you. My friend, love what you're doing with the brand. They're lucky to have such a sober, focused, responsible. No, I mean, we could get, you know, you could have Lisa Marie Presley running Shelby into the ground. You know, I mean, I really mean it as a compliment. It's a roll the dice when the old man goes.
Yeah.
Is it a bunch of kids fighting over money, or is it like someone who's like responsible, fiscally responsible, sort of has reverence for the brand? And it's like, I can't think of a better steward than you in this department. So you should.
I appreciate that. Thank you. It's a lot of fun for me. And, you know, nobody can beat Carroll. We're not going to repeat him, but we just help carry on the business and the legacy the best that we can.
Well, like I said, you think it would be a no-brainer, but there's many instances where it does
every other instance
it does not go that way. When my dad dies and I take over the Corolla brand for Toyota, me and my sister are going to do nothing but fight.
The trumpet brand of whatever.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, Aaron. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
That's a good guy.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Actually, that was such a great point because him and his brothers, like everybody gets along. They're in the family building half the time, and they're, you know, they're still running businesses and doing stuff together. So,
yeah. No, look, it doesn't have to go south. It just always does when the marquee Elvis or Shelby or Paul Newman or whoever, when they die, it just goes down this road. There's litigation, there's infighting, there's the ne'er-do-well half-brother who wants his stake. It just has to go that way. But Shelby is figured out. And I think a lot of that is Aaron from what I know of Aaron.
It is. And it helps that they're all pretty successful in their own right outside of the Shelby legacy. Like they've all done well.
That's helpful.
That's helpful.
All right. Let me tell you about O'Reilly Auto Parts. I'll tell you, I've always shopped at O'Reilly. I've always worked on my own stuff. There's a satisfaction in it. And O'Reilly's always been the place I'd go to get all the filters and oil and wiper blades and beyond. And now they got the O Rewards bonus points. And that's what month we're in at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You can shop in store or online. You get points and rewards sent straight to your phone or your inbox. Get 2, 3, or even 4 times bonus points on select purchases. And, you'll get to your next reward that much faster. Receive a $5 reward for every 150 O Reward points. If you're already an O Rewards member and not receiving your rewards, well, just add your email or mobile phone number and get a $10 reward just for updating your existing account. So sign up, and it's easy. It's quick. And do it at O'ReillyAuto.com, or you can do it in store, because I know a lot of you like to go into those stores. I do. O'ReillyAuto.com, or you can sign up in store. All right. You can go to AdamCarolla.com for live shows this weekend, this Sunday. I think I'll be at Solana Beach at the Belly Up, and then West Palm Beach, Baltimore, Naples. I'm all over the place. So just go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live stuff. What do you got, Matt?
I've been driving a few cars, and to get the Mustang Mach 1 back, so you get to, I'll post some videos and a clip of hearing that thing up on my social media.
Mm. So, till next time, it's Adam Carolla for Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea, and Aaron Shelby, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.